Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 12 of A Year-Long Conversation. Primarily, I want to talk about March 15th, because we really believe that that's the day that the race is going to be decided one way or the other. March 15th, beware the Ides of March. That's what we're going to be talking about. We're also going to be talking about the GOP establishment and how dumb they're looking and how they get clowned every step of the way. How's it going, Michael?
Going great. Can't wait for the Ides of March.
I know. It's going to be exciting. I'll get into that in just a minute, because I really, truly believe that that's going to be the day that we know who the nominees will be. But we've had a really eventful week in the last week. The last time we talked to people, it was right before Super Tuesday. The Super Tuesday results came in, and they pretty much were what everybody expected. I think the only thing that really surprised me was that Ted Cruz won Alaska. I didn't think he would win Alaska, but I'm not surprised, because it's a caucus state. He does very well in these caucus states where he can manipulate the rules. He's very heavily focused on states where only 100 people vote. It's kind of his big thing. I think we'll find out that his supporters hit some shady trick where basically they were offering a free cruise out of Alaska. Oh, I'll sign up for that. Just mark cruise down with that ballot. You'll go to Hawaii. And don't spend a lot of time on this, because people have picked over the Super Tuesday results. They've picked over the Super Saturday results, where Ted Cruz, he again won a caucus state. He won Kansas, and he also won Maine. Trump won Louisiana and Kentucky, which everybody pretty much expected. So we've had Super Tuesday. We've had Super Saturday. But really, all these things are kind of nothing compared to March 15th, right?
Yeah, it is. I think that's today that come right down to all the important states in the election. They're going to vote.
I definitely want to get into it. We'll just mention a couple of quick things, because there's just been so much news in this last week and a half. We've seen the saddest loss that we've ever had at this race. I mean, I was devastated to find out that Ben Carson had quit the race.
Yes. Can we all just take a moment, have a moment of silence for Whispering Ben? Only a moment of silence would fit in with Ben Carson, who was practically silent through much of the race.
The best way to commemorate this terrible loss for America is go into work and say, can I get some more time? And they say, what do you need more time for? And just say, I don't know. I just need more time. Just complain that you're not getting enough attention and enough time and nobody's listening to your ideas. And then when they ask for your ideas, let them know why they don't ask for it by giving them really terrible ones. So that'd be the best way. But when I saw he quit, I was devastated. And then we saw that another departure. This one didn't even get in the race. Michael Bloomberg, he said he wasn't going to run officially. He basically said that he would help Trump or Ted Cruz. He knew he would take more support away from the Democrats than he would give to the Republicans. So he didn't want to indirectly lead to President Trump or President Cruz by giving the race that he knew probably would cost Hillary more votes than anybody. And it seemed in that statement like he was getting ready to endorse Hillary.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see the actual statement, but I did read
it.
You missed a lot, because Bloomberg, he's a charismatic individual. I mean, he is really raw charisma, that guy. I don't know how you could... I mean, I'm sure his press secretary wrote the statement, but dazzle, it was all Bloomberg.
He's as charismatic as a rock, so I hate I missed it.
Yeah, it was a real barn burner, but you think that's probably true, that him getting in the race would probably hurt Hillary more than it would Trump?
Yeah, I would think so. It may hurt Trump in New York. Yeah, he's not going to win it anyway, so it really wouldn't matter.
Basically, with Bloomberg, he had said that he would get in the race if it were Bernie and Trump, because he didn't think either one of them was fit to be president. So he said that he was going to get in only if the Democrats went for Bernie and the Republicans went for Trump. He didn't feel like either one would be a suitable president. And if you look at that, I think Democrats dodged a bullet by him not getting the race, because I think he might have, if it were him versus Bernie, he probably would chip in to like some purple states like Pennsylvania, Florida and Pennsylvania. He might split the vote in New York enough that it would make a difference. Although I kind of doubt, I don't think he really left New York very popular, to be honest. Even if he'd caucus Bernie like a handful of blue states and three or four big purple states, that's enough for it to go to the Republican. I think they probably did dodge a bullet by him not getting in there. And Peyton Manning, he retired. I mean, this is just, Michael, we're losing everybody. I mean,
we are. I mean, not to mention, the other big exciting news story was apparently they found O.J.'s knife buried in his backyard.
I know. I'm like, O.J. Simpson, Ben Carson, Peyton Manning, and Michael Bloomberg. What a roster of talent, has-beens, and wash-ups. And I feel like it was probably one of the Kardashians that put that knife out there, because we hadn't talked about it in a couple of weeks. So, like,
yeah,
I saw Kim just took a naked picture and put it out there. God damn it, all this people paying attention to the news again and people talking about the presidential race, they can't pay attention to my nipple size. They're too distracted painting out what's actually going on in America to talk about me. So, like, they're getting increasingly desperate to get the conversation back on them. But I think for political junkies, we live in an exciting time, because this presidential race year, this is really the only time people are actually kind of paying attention to politics. I mean, they sort to have it in the background most of the time. I mean, there may be one or two trending topics on Twitter, but your average TV media, I mean, we've seen them on CNN cut away from talking to a congresswoman so they can talk about Justin Bieber's arrest. So that's actually the priorities that we have. So I think this is an exciting time to be alive in politics and really have a political blog and a podcast, because this March month really is probably the most exciting month of the primaries.
Yeah, it is. I tell my students how exciting it is, and they just look at me like I'm stupid.
Some people, you might go up to them and say, are you paying attention to the presidential race? Like, what? No, I don't know. It's hard not to know about it this year. 2012, I mean, Herman Cain versus Mitt Romney, really. I think people were kind of zoned out a little bit. So, but if this year, you got Trump and Ted Cruz and all these assholes on the one side, and then you got Hillary and Bernie, it's kind of hard to zone out this year. It's exciting. 2008, we had two good contests on both sides where there wasn't a vice president that was running. This year, same thing. The vice president's not running. It's kind of open on both sides. I think that makes it exciting. But we're going to see things really change on March 15th. People might wonder what we're talking about. For those that don't know, five really big states are voting that day. You have Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, Illinois, and Missouri. Now, four of those are purple states, really. I know technically Illinois is a blue state, but it's still a big state. You got the city of Chicago. So Bernie, I mean, you know, if he loses Illinois, he loses by a pretty big margin. And that's really probably his best chance to win a state that day, because the other ones are not looking so great. So you got Illinois, which is a big enough state with a lot of delegates, but it does matter who wins that, even though Democrats will pick it up in the fall, no problem. But the other four states are really purple states. North Carolina is a soft red state. It's a pretty red state, but Obama did win that in 2008.
Yeah.
So it's not totally out of reach for a Democrat like Hillary to win that, especially if there's a nominee that the Republicans don't like. So you got North Carolina, then you got Missouri, and I really think Missouri is going to be really important. People look at me like I'm crazy because Obama lost that both in 2008 and 2012, but typically Missouri accurately predicts who the president's going to be, even more than Ohio does. So Missouri is important, Ohio's important, and I keep saying over and over again, the race is really going to come down to move, Missouri, Ohio, Virginia. And you're going to have those three kind of states right there. They almost touch each other. They're going to be really important this year. And you got Ohio and Missouri both voting that day. And who they pick, I think in both parties, that's going to be important, because you're kind of going to see who might could really become the next president. And then you got Florida, which is the biggest contest. And Florida, for the Republican side, Florida and Ohio and Missouri, those are all winner-take-all states. And in Ohio, you got 66 delegates coming that way. In Florida, you got 99 delegates, almost 100 delegates. It's hard to see anybody who's left in the race not win in Florida and then getting enough delegates to win the whole nomination on the Republican side.
Yeah, so for Republicans, you can see why the 15th is going to be such an important date. I mean, when you have Florida, when you have Ohio, when you have North Carolina, all of these really important states, all of these states that you have basically the candidates that are left that really don't have a shot, they're banking on these states. You have Rubio banking on Florida. You have Kasich still in the race banking on Ohio. So the 15th, that's going to be pretty much make or break for their candidacy. I mean, if they both lose in their home state, then they're gone. And if they lose to Trump, Trump's going to be the nominee. I mean,
let's kind of get in a little bit into the weeds now. For this podcast, we try not to get too bogged down in the technical aspects. Those are sometimes a little bit boring. But on March 15th, they're really important because Kasich, first of all, he can't win the nomination no matter what happens in Ohio. I mean, he can't win. And people keep pretending that he's got a real candidacy. He doesn't. He can't win. It's over. Because right now, this is a bit wonkish, but follow me just a little bit. I know liberals hate math. I hate math, too. I sucked at it. That's why we have podcasts and blogs. But the math on the 15th is a little... You need 1,237 delegates to win the whole nomination. There's only about 1,500. Okay, so... And John Kasich right now has 35. There's no way. It's over. He would have to win basically 80% of the delegates that are left. There's no way he's going to win 80% of the delegates that are left. That would be almost every state that's left, and there's no way he can win that. So he's really an asshole. People talk about John Kasich. He's the nice guy in the race. You know, he's the friendly guy. He's really an asshole, because the only reason in the race right now is to be a spoiler to keep Trump from getting Ohio's delegates. Like, that's all he's there for. That's it.
Yeah.
Because he wants a brokered convention. Rubio wants a brokered convention, even though he won't come out and say that. They both want a brokered convention, because that'll be the only way they could possibly be the nominees. Now, people listening at home, we definitely don't want a brokered convention. I don't think anybody does, except for the people inside the Republican Party. Like the establishment, I think they want it. And that brings us to why we're going to talk about, are the Republicans just total fucking morons? Like the Republican establishment, are they trying to look dumb? It seems like they couldn't do a better job of it if they were trying to. if they were trying to look like idiots, I don't think they could do a better job of it. But Kasich is there solely to deprive Trump of Ohio's winner-take-all electoral votes. He wants to keep those out of Trump's column, and then he'll be in Ohio, and he'll campaign a couple of more weeks, and he'll get beaten almost every state, and then he can drop out, and those delegates won't go to Trump. Rubio is basically doing the same thing. He can't win either. And he keeps thinking he can win, and he can't. His polls are not trending upward, they're trending downward. In almost every national poll, he's lost a lot of the support because his whole strategy was, I'm going to collect all the endorsements, and all the endorsements will come to me. And I think he really underestimated how unpopular most of the people that were endorsing him are.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people were really sitting around being like, I wonder who Mitt Romney is going to endorse. They were pretty much done with him the day after the 2012 election. I don't think they really cared about him.
They were done with him a month before the 2012 election.
Yeah. I think he's had all these relics come out, like Bob Dole and John McCain and Mitt Romney and all these guys. Even somebody like Nikki Haley. The pundits, again, they're wrong about everything. I really think people should listen to us if they want to know what's going on. I'm not just saying that because I need the traffic or whatever. You know, like, I mean, we're totally not biased, right? But
no.
I really think that we do a better job of it than the pundits do, because the pundits are not, they're not thinking how people think. They're not really getting into it. And I think they keep thinking, well, why is it Rubio's getting all these governor endorsements and they don't matter? And how is it that the governor of Maine can endorse Trump and then Ted Cruz wins? Why is it that the governor of everywhere else can endorse Rubio and he can't win anywhere else? And I think it's because they don't understand that, like, those, all these governors were pretty much elected in midterms. And I don't think anybody really voted for these people. When you look at the voter turnout in midterm, off your presidential elections in midterm, they're terrible. And you talk about some deep red states like South Carolina. I mean, people in South Carolina, they like Nikki Haley, but most of these people didn't vote for her. And the people that are showing up now to vote for Trump, I'm willing to bet that they didn't vote at all in the midterms that elected these governors in the first place.
If you ask Trump, the people of South Carolina just can't stand Nikki Haley. I don't know if you saw he tweeted that out.
Well, yeah, but I don't know about her specifically, but when Trump says the people don't care about the Bushes and they don't like Mitt Romney,
yeah,
he's not wrong. I don't know
no,
about Nikki Haley, but I think when he's talking about these other people, like, he's, people say, Trump, he can't win. He attacked George W. Bush, and then he won in a landslide, and it's like, oh,
yeah,
shit. I don't know where their polls are getting this from, that George W. Bush, Mitt Romney, and Karl Rove, the Koch brothers, all these dinosaurs that Trump is really taking to the tar pits. I mean, he's taking Karl Rove to the tar pits and clubbed him, throwing him in the fucking tar pits. I mean,
yeah,
they're done. And I don't know where the polls are getting this from, that Republican voters are like, I got to go for who Karl Rove tells me to vote for. I mean, these are not people that were ever that popular, really. Certainly not in the last few years.
I don't know where they're coming from either.
Their own ass is what it sounds like when they're coming out. Because people kept saying, well, Trump, hey, he assaulted George W. Bush. There's no way he can win South Carolina. And he won in a landslide. And I'm like, for every vote he lost, passing George W. Bush, he picked up 5 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody likes the Bushes. Nobody likes Karl Rove. Nobody likes Mitt Romney. And I hate seeing Mitt Romney on TV. Anytime I see him, I try to pick up the channel. Because if I don't, there'll be an oily streak on the TV. He's so oily and slimy and green. Like, what's this oil on the TV? Oh, Mitt Romney was on. He just slimed it up. I saw him the day after the Super Saturday results, and Trump lost Maine, and he lost Kansas, and I'm not surprised he lost Kansas. We'll get into that in a second, but the reporter, he asked Mitt Romney, do you think your attack had an effect? I think it did. Oh, I definitely think it did. You know, like, he basically made it seem like Trump's loss was all due to him, and he's giving himself all this credit. I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think Jay Cruz very good at caucus states like Maine, and I think in Kansas, Trump is a Midwestern problem. It's not a Mitt Romney problem. It's not a Jeb Bush problem. It's not a Karl Rove problem. It's not a Koch brothers problem. It's a Midwestern problem. All the states he loses, Texas, they would consider themselves the Southeast. They're really not. They're really Midwest. If you look at just a map, if you look at a map of the country, Oklahoma is definitely not the Southeast. I hate to tell that to all the country music stars that have come out of there, but they're definitely not the South. They're Midwest. Iowa, tell people in Iowa, say, you're Midwestern, and they're weirdly proud of that fact. Thank you. They're about as Midwest as it gets. You got Minnesota. So Trump, he's losing, like, Minnesota to Rubio, which is, a lot of people were surprised by that. They must not read Alabama Liberal because we called down. But he's losing all these Midwestern states. It's a Midwestern problem. I think people, they're reading too much into it, and I think that they're kind of making a mistake thinking that they can still beat him. They can beat him, but not the way they think. They think they can beat him with a Kasich or a Rubio or a Ted Cruz. They could beat him at a brokered convention, and that's it.
Yeah.
The options right now are somehow Ted Cruz convinces the people of New York to get amnesia and forget that he talked about New York values and shit on them for a month. When we said that the Republican establishment are idiots, this is how dumb they are. A lot of these people like Lindsey Graham are now saying, well, we all need to get behind Ted Cruz at this point. Look at a map. Like, I know you guys suck at the math and all this other stuff and the polls and the understanding people's opinions and the psychology of how people are voting. I know you guys are completely out of touch with your base, but look at a map. Because in April, the states that vote in April, Maryland, Delaware, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, Ted Cruz can't win any of those. I don't even think he can win Pennsylvania. So you're talking about, like, New York gets the biggest prize in April, and Ted Cruz went out of his way to insult them. I don't think they're going to vote for him.
What if Ted Cruz didn't even plan to be around in April?
His whole strategy, people kept saying, well, you know, the Southeast, that's Trump's firewall. The Southeast was supposed to be Ted Cruz's firewall. His strategy was to win enough of the southern states that he had such a delegate lead that it didn't matter what happened in April, if there even was an April.
Yeah.
And his strategy, this is what we mean when we say that the Republican establishment are idiots. All the strategies here suck. Kasich's strategy is, I can lose the first 25 states and somehow turn it around. No, never, ever happened before. Nobody's ever lost the first 20 states and then won the nomination. Like, ever. Like, it's not even possible. It's not even mathematical. Rubio's strategy is, I can win one out of every 10 states and win the nomination. Well, that sucks too. And Rubio is becoming increasingly, like, disconnected from reality. I mean, he's like, you almost see the, I mean, I can almost picture the guy talking to the family dog being like, we're right where we need to be. And the dog's worried. He's like, should I run away? I don't know what. Because, I mean, he keeps losing all these states by huge margins, and he keeps saying he's in it to win it, and it's going to turn around, and it's just, he's not getting it.
His communications director was on TV talking to Wolf Blitzer, and Wolf was like, why are you still around? How are you going to win the nomination? Well, we're going to win, like, our biggest competition is Ted Cruz, and he can only win caucus state. He's going to be out.
And they have Donald fucking Trump, who's won almost every state that's come out.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Cruz, they talk about Trump like he's not in the race. They're like, well, he's only won a mere 75, but he's only won a mere 3/4 of the states that have voted. I mean, that's all he's won, you know? I mean, they talk about him like he's not at the top.
Yeah. Funniest part about watching that is all they talked about was Ted Cruz couldn't win in anything in a primary. He could only win a caucus. But Rubio can't win anything.
The really irony of that is, the only state Rubio's won is the Minnesota caucus. So you can almost say Rubio can't win anything that's not a caucus.
Yeah.
The biggest state that he's won is Minnesota caucus. And then I saw he also won the territory of Puerto Rico, which I think is going to hurt him more than help him. Like, you're going to see the states coming up or whatever. You know, Trump, I mean, he'll be like, this guy, he won Puerto Rico. Why does Puerto Rico even get a vote? And so, I mean, it doesn't matter that he can win unanimously in the Puerto Rico caucus. It doesn't matter he can win in the Minnesota caucus. This shit doesn't matter. And I think for him to say, well, take Cruz can only win in the caucus state. You're exactly right. Rubio, you can't win. You couldn't win your house. And he's gone from third to fourth in some of the states. I mean, he did terrible in some of the Super Saturday states. And it's not, I think he's a guy that, he's like, I've got the endorsements, I've got the party behind me, I've got the money behind me. Yeah, you got everything but the voters. Like, you know, like, if this weren't a democracy, you would be killing it. Like, if we had a third world country, like, you would kill it right now. You'd have the warlords, you'd have the money, you'd have all this. But he doesn't have the voters, he doesn't have the people. And I think the Republican Party keeps forgetting that that's kind of important, that the people voting. This just brings us back to a brokered convention, which would be absolutely terrible, because the guy like Rubio or Kasich, they could win. And it seems like their whole strategy is to basically deprive Trump of the delegates he needs to get enough. Right now, Trump has almost 400 delegates and a third of the delegates he needs to win. Now, he's pointed out that he would love to face Ted Cruz one-on-one in April because, I mean, states for Ted Cruz and April, they suck. I mean, they're terrible, which is why the Republican Party getting behind Ted at this point is ridiculous.
Right.
And people keep saying, well, Trump, he can't win a two-man race. He would love to have a two-man race against Ted Cruz because he knows a lot of the Rubio support. I mean, some of it may go to Ted Cruz. Some of it won't vote because a lot of the establishment Republicans don't like Ted Cruz either. He'll win the New England states that Ted Cruz has insulted, and he'll win some of the establishment people once Kasich and Rubio drop out, because a lot of the people said that they just can't vote for Ted Cruz. He and Ted Cruz will split some of the establishment supporters. A lot of people will be like, we don't want either one of these guys. And some of them may not vote. Some of them may get behind Trump. I mean, people keep acting like, oh, Chris Christie, he endorsed Trump. He threw away his integrity. It was outrageous. And I'm like, or maybe he just saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he saw that Trump has a third of the delegates he needs. Nobody but Ted Cruz is even close to him. And he didn't like Ted Cruz either. And the state's coming up. In April, as I said, you got the New England states, and then if it goes all the way to June, The very last states to vote are California and New Jersey, winner take all. There's 200 delegates just on that one day between those two states. There's like 225 delegates on just those two states on just that day, winner take all. So if it came all the way to June 7th, I mean, Trump would almost certainly win New Jersey. And he probably has a really good chance of winning California. It's really going to come down to either he wins or a brokered convention happens, and that's it. And I don't think Ted Cruz wants a brokered convention either, because if you could pick anybody in the Republican Party, they're not going to pick him either.
No,
I don't think he really wants that scenario either. So I don't know what his strategy is, unless he just plans to start cheating, which is the Ted Cruz strategy.
Yeah, because I think the only person that the Republican establishment would not want more are just as much as Donald Trump would be Ted Cruz. So if it goes to a broker convention, there's no way he's it's over for him.
It's hard to know what his strategy really is at this point, except spoiler, because I don't think he can get the number of delegates he needs to win. Ted Cruz is an evil genius, so I'd be surprised if he didn't know that at some level. I mean, Ted Cruz, he reminds me of like the bad guy in an action movie. The Rock's going to stop him from blowing up the world or something. He's going to come in and stop this evil calculating guy. I look at Cruz and be like, I know you're winning states. I know you're catching up to Donald. I know you're taking delegates, but you can't win either. Like, at this point, and this is why March 15th is so important. But you got those five states, big states, important states, four swing states. And I think if Bernie loses all those, I know he probably won't. He should drop out at that point. Like, if he doesn't win them, any of them, he should go home. I don't think he will. But at that point, what he'll be telling us is, well, I can win Minnesota, which is anybody can win Minnesota. Anybody. I mean, I predicted Minnesota would go for him because it's crazy. It's a crazy-ass state. I mean, it's the only state in America that never went for Reagan. Only state. Almost every state went for him in 80, and then every state went for him in 84, except Minnesota. That's the only state in America that's never voted for Reagan. Any Democrat could win that state in a presidential election. I mean, I know at a statewide level, Minnesota is schizophrenic, because you got Michelle Bachmann's district right beside Keith Ellison's district. You got the most Islamophobic member of Congress beside the only Muslim in Congress. So it's, at a statewide level, it's completely schizophrenic. But because two-thirds of the entire state lives within range of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, it's very concentrated. So the state Congress and all this stuff, it's different. But, I mean, it's a crazy state, because they got a Democratic governor now, Mark Dayton. Before that, they had a Republican governor, Tim Pawlenty. And before that, they had Jesse Ventura. Who the fuck knows what he is? He's half Austrian or something. I don't even know what that crazy bastard is. It's crazy. They had the independent Republican Democrat. I think the only state in America that done that back-to-back. The next election, they're going to have a member of the Communist Party or something. I don't know. Like, I don't know who they'll have. So Bernie, he can do very well in states like that, but it doesn't matter. If he can't win Ohio and Virginia, Virginia's already voted and voted for Hillary. If he can't win Ohio, Virginia, Florida, Missouri, I know he can't win North Carolina, but I mean, if he can't win any of the big purple states, what's the point? You know?
Right. That's what people don't get. Primaries tell you what the general is going to look like, and if you have a candidate that's losing in swing state, who cares if he's the nominee? Who cares if he wins, 30 completely blue states? I mean, I doubt there's really 30 blue states out there, but I mean, who cares if he wins all the true blue states and a few random caucuses here and there? It doesn't matter. He needs to win big in swing states, and if he can't win that, he's not going to win in the general.
I think Rubio's chances, they're half dead right now. I mean, they're pretty much dead, especially if he loses Florida, but they pretty much died when he didn't win Virginia on Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Republicans were saying, he'll win Virginia, and that's a purple state, and that'll show you that he's the best candidate in purple states. And then when Trump won Virginia, I think that pretty much dealt, his campaign was not doing great, that dealt it a fatal blow, because when he didn't win Nevada or Virginia, it really showed that, like, in the purple states, Trump is dominating, and he is.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at states that will actually determine who the president is, in the purple states, he's winning huge, and I mean, we'll see what happens, but, so on the Democrat side, I mean, who gives a fuck if Bernie wins Vermont and Minnesota by 50 points, who cares? I mean, anybody can win those. If he loses Ohio and North Carolina and Virginia and Florida and Illinois, doesn't really matter that much. But if he loses that, it would just kind of be like, yeah, you really should go home, really, at this point. But I don't think he will, because his campaign does this thing where they're like, they skip 3 weeks. So like right before South Carolina, he's like, we're looking forward to Super Tuesday. And forget about South Carolina. Then on Super Tuesday, he's like, we're looking forward to Michigan. And he skipped like Louisiana and Mississippi, you know. And when he gets, his ass kicked, you know, it'll be like, oh, well, like on the March 15th, once he gets, but he's already started talking about New York, which doesn't vote until the middle of April. And I'm like, yeah. This should not be going till the middle of April. This should not even be a race by that time. It's kind of funny, too, that like Sanders and Cruz, they're doing well in about the same states.
Yeah.
Because they both dominate like the main caucus and they both have a pretty good Midwestern thing going on with like Kansas, so they're kind of doing like somewhat similar Midwestern states, like quiet driven states, and weird outlier states like Maine. But I think with the Republican side, there's no way Rubio can win. I mean, I know I said this like 10 times, but literally there's no way he can win. He just wants to take the 100 delegates from Trump, because if Trump loses both Ohio and Florida, he can still be the nominee, but it'll be a lot harder, because if he loses both of those, then Rubio and Kasich, they'll have the excuse they need to stay in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll just be splitting delegates further and further. But I think if he beats Kasich in Ohio, Kasich essentially has no reason to stick around. And he really has no reason to stick around now. Like, I think he's an asshole for still being there. And Rubio, they've said over and over again, Florida's do or die for him. If he loses Florida, he should go home. I think he should go home anyway before Florida even happens. And if Ted Cruz, what does it say about him if he can't win a single purple state, like Virginia, North Carolina, Ohio, Florida? Like, if he can't win any of those, and I don't think he's going to win a single state on March 15th, what does that say about him?
Well, it says that if he wins the nomination somehow, some way, then Hillary's going to be in the White House. That's all that matters.
I mean, yeah. I hate to always do predictions because they're usually wrong, and because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, when Trump was in the race before Super Saturday, I mean, I felt pretty confident he would lose Kansas, but I thought for sure he would win Maine, and then I thought he would win Louisiana and Kentucky by bigger margins, but then he pretty much had a dick measuring contest at the debate, and it was like that probably did cost him some votes. So you never know what that is. I mean, that's the thing. I think people who vote for Trump the most are comedians who did material. Like, I think they're the biggest voting block.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the people who hate him the most are pundits, because he throws their numbers up the damn window every time he opens his mouth. I hate doing any forecasting, because you never know what this guy's... We could say he's going to win every one of those five states, and then he'll literally show up at the next debate and put his dick out. We're like, isn't this big? But I'm like, isn't this amazing? You know, like, he'll literally do that. So you never know. Like, I hate to forecast and say he'll win those, and then he does something embarrassing between now and then.
Yeah. And it's funny, because he did that, and now the DNC is coming out with ads attacking him. And like, one of them, it's like a ad, looks like he's the Godfather. And I don't know if you've seen this or not, but.
Yeah, loose mafia connections from like, everybody is pretty much anybody in New York beauty expect to have. And Ted Cruz is the first person I heard talking about his mafia ties.
Right.
First person I heard. But you gotta wonder about Ted Cruz, cause I mean, his dad, I'm like, you really want to open the door to mafia ties when your dad's got a lot of ties. Castro and all that. I mean, like, really want to open the door to ties. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because Ted Cruz is really amazing, because whenever you see him during the debates, he skips over the part where his parents met in Canada. You notice that? Like, my dad was born in Cuba, and then when he came to Texas, I'm like, you're leaving out a big chunk where he lived in Canada.
Yeah.
He stayed up for like 5 years and met your mom, and they got married there and had you there. Like, you're leaving all that. I have to wonder if Trump's just asleep when he talks about this, because you especially want to be like, Canada.
Yeah.
Because Cruz, I mean, he does that a lot. Like, if you listen to Ted's origin story, he was egg hatched out of an American flag in Texas. This race is a race of extremes. You have probably the craziest Democratic candidate I've ever seen in Bernie Sanders. You have the biggest liar I've ever seen in Ted Cruz, the guy who doesn't know who he is. I mean, I call Rubio Identity Crisis Jones. Most of these candidates are just liars by nature, and they lie and they tell people what they want to hear. I don't think Rubio honestly knows the difference between like a lie and what's real. Like, I think he doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that Trump is the most undisciplined presidential candidate I've ever seen. He has no discipline, like, at all.
I mean, really, could you imagine what George Washington would be thinking? He sees Trump, because, you know, Washington was that strong, silent type. He would sit and listen to everybody's opinion before... not Trump.
No, I don't think so. And Trump, he's the kind of guy, he's like, well, I'm up 20 points in this state, but I really want to punch Ted Cruz in the mouth. I think I'll punch him in the mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, he's the kind of guy that would blow a lead like that. But I think what I think was a little phony, though, was at the last debate. I mean, everybody's talking about this ad nauseum, but a lot of people were like, oh, Trump, I can't believe what he's... I'm like, you know, he's responding to what Rubio said about him, right? Because when Rubio said he's got small hands mean something else. I'm like, that seemed like Rubio introduced his dick into the conversation. Like, if if they were on trial, it would be like, no, the prosecution, he introduced this evidence. We're gonna hear it. Rubio brought that up, but it's all about, oh, how vulgar Trump is for responding to it and everything. And I mean, I get what they're saying, because literally it's turned into a dick measuring contest. But at the same time, I don't know why they didn't say anything about how Rubio kind of introduced that line of questioning.
Well, I think everybody was just so amazed that Trump actually went there.
Honestly, though, I loved it. Because like when that happened, I have the DVR, and when that happened, I go, he didn't say that. And then I hit the rewind, I was like, he said it. You know, and it was
I didn't believe
he said that. And then I had to rewind it, and then my eyes like popped open. I was like, he said it.
Yeah.
I must have laughed for five straight minutes. I think it was awesome because right after he said that, they went to Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz looked so uncomfortable. That's what made it even better to me. It was like, Ted Cruz is like, he's like, I don't know how do I spin this country music, American flag. He's like running through all of his like fake references that he goes to for everything.
Yeah.
He's like, guns, ISIS, no, nothing's in here about dick size. You know, he's like,
Well, you know, I'm from Texas, and everything's bigger in Texas.
I'm surprised he didn't be like, my nuts are the same size as George Washington's, because George Washington was an amazing president, and my nuts are the exact right size to protect the Constitution. He didn't know what to do, and that made it even better. And then what was even better is, like, Rubio is that guy that, if he's around, like, a forceful personality, he tries to become, like, he's like a fucking commander. Like, he becomes who he's with, because before, when there was, like, 17 Republicans, and most of them were more like him, he was one way, and now that it's pretty much just a stage of him and Trump shit on each other, you know, he's like become a weird, bizarro version of Trump. He's, like, become,
yeah.
And I have to look at that strategy and think, this is what we say when we mention it over and over again, that the Republican establishment are idiots. I'm like, if people wanted an immature insult comic, they would be voting for Trump.
Yeah.
You can't beat him by becoming a worse version of him. You know, this is like,
yeah.
Like you said, Trump can say Little Marco, and he goes, all right, Big Don. And I'm like, you're not even good at this insulting thing. Because, you know, Trump, yeah. Like the second he called him Big Donald, you know, Trump was just like, I like that. You know, he probably went out and got a vanity plate for his helicopter, Big Don, and put it on the side of it. I mean, Trump probably, it gave me like a prison guard vibe where he's like coming up to Rubio in like a skull cap or something, like, what's up, bitch? And Big Don, you know, like, you better go ahead and bend over. I mean, what's this? He's going to put Rubio at one of the podiums or something. I mean, it's amazing for Rubio to think he can beat Trump by becoming a shittier version of him. It's reinforcing what Trump's, I think his big argument, that our leaders are incompetent. I don't think that applies at all to the Democrats. But I think if you take what he's saying and you apply it to the Republican Party, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
I think what's shocking these pundits and pollsters is that Trump is so relentless on the Republican Party. He's relentless on Obama. He's relentless on Hillary. I feel like when he makes fun of Hillary, his eyes kind of glaze over, and he only really comes to life when he gets to make fun of Jeb Bush. You know, like, he almost like he entered this race to have some bizarre form of torture on Jeb Bush, like it was some elaborate Count of Monte Cristo-style plot where he's like, this is how I'm going to bring down the Bushes. You know, he's got some 50-page plan that he made in his cell. He really lights up when he gets to make fun of the Republican establishment, how dumb they got and how they lost their way. And in those instances, his criticisms are not wrong. And that's what people are not really getting. And they keep saying, Bernie, you know, his revolution is stalling out. People are not voting for it. Donald, and I'm like, yeah, Donald is offering a revolution that the people are actually voting for. And Bernie keeps saying, we have to empower the people. I'm like, they're empowered and they're not voting for you. They don't want what you're selling. And they keep saying, how is that possible that this billionaire asked? And it's like, how is he the voice of American populism? And I think it comes down to the fact that the Democrats don't need a revolution. The Republicans do. And that's the big, big difference for me is when Bernie talks about revolution, he talks about we got to do this, we got to do that. I think he's trying to form a revolution in a party that doesn't need it. And I think the Republicans desperately need one. And that's what's really driving people on the Republican side to Trump. They're not going for the change candidate in Bernie because the Democrats don't need it. He's been as good as anybody could have with the Congress he's had to work with. Hillary is just as capable. I mean, she's boring. She's a techno. Yeah, he's done as well as anybody on earth could have done with this Congress. And I think the best possible person to succeed him is Hillary. I think she'll do almost as good. I mean, she's a technocrat. If anybody knows about governing, it's Hillary. I mean, you get the idea that she's downstairs. Like, Bill's like, you want to come to bed? No, I'm going to work on these spreadsheets. She's the class nerd, and we need that, really, to be honest.
Yeah, we do.
And I think that with Bernie, he's asking for revolution in a party that doesn't need it, and Trump is just hammering these assholes that they needed it. They've had this coming. They've mismanaged managed the party into ruin. I mean, when you go back and look at Eisenhower and you look at Bush and Ted Cruz, it's not even the same party. And they needed this sadly. And I think that's what people are responding to.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And the racism.
Just look at
And the racism and nationalism. I mean, Trump is, he's completely indefensible in many, many, many ways. But I think the biggest difference between me and a lot of other liberals is I know Trump's an asshole and I know he's indefensible and there's no way I'm going to vote for him and I'm going to go for Hillary 100%. But I don't think his opposite candidates are any better. I don't think Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are any better. I think in many ways, Ted Cruz is worse, a lot worse.
Yeah.
So I don't think that his opponents are any better. I didn't want to see a Jeb Bush, a third Bush president, to run the economy in the ground. I don't think Kasich is a nice guy. I think he pretends to be a nice guy. So when I look at these other candidates, I'm like, yeah, I get the Never Trump movement in the general election, but like in the primary, it's really hard to care if like Ted Cruz beat, like, how can you say, well, we stopped Trump. Oh, well, you got Ted Cruz as a nominee. Fuck. You know, I mean, it's just like, not any better. And so when people keep asking me to really care about stopping Trump in the primary, I'm like, I just don't. I don't think this is the place to stop him. Like, I think it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, because I look at a guy like Kasich, and I'm like, America's so dumb, they'll fall for him, and he might beat Hillary. And I look at a guy like Cruz, who in many ways is worse than Trump, and for me, it's just really hard to care about him not being the nominee to really get invested in that.
I mean, I hate the man with a passion. I hate every fiber of him, but I would feel much more comfortable.
People who tell me that, I'm like, you're not wrong, but hate him in July, you know? I'm like, you're not wrong. I mean, the guy would be an awful president, but at the same time, I can't possibly care about who their nominee is when they're all equally, like, you don't replace, we're going to stop Trump from being the nominee. We're going to put in Brian Sandoval as the nominee. It don't work that way. Like, you've only got so many choices, and I look at these choices, and they're all terrible.
Yeah.
If you replace Trump with a moderate Republican or a Republican that's pretty good, then is that really what we even want to do? Because that would be more likely to lose. We'd be more likely to beat Hillary. Also, it's like, even wanting another Republican, like, even having you go to a brokered convention, and they nominate Brian Sandoval or somebody remotely decent, like, do we even want that? Because then that would be
right
for the November election. So even then, it's hard to really want him replaced with a better Republican.
And that's where I was going. You know, I hate the man with the passion, but I would much rather have him as a candidate to face in November than somebody like Ted Cruz.
Yeah, because Ted Cruz, I mean, he's so evil. Like they might be like, well, Hillary technically beat me in every state, but there's a loophole.
Right.
Find some arcane clause. You know, Trump, his rhetoric is terrible. So somebody put it in really good perspective. They said, Ted Cruz is worse because everything Trump is saying, Ted Cruz really believes it. You know, Trump, his rhetoric is nasty and terrible, but so far his campaigning has not been dirty tricks.
Right.
He hasn't really used any dirty tricks for his campaigning. And whenever I see the Republican establishment being like, we got to stop Trump, and I mean, these are not Democrats. These are which I understand Democrats. I understand their reservations, but for the Republicans to hate him and say, we got to stop him, I'm like, he's winning fair and square.
Yeah.
Like, they go, well, we'll just save America by avoiding the results of a Democratic election. I'm just like, that's I don't think you save democracy by throwing out how people are voting. Like, to me, that's not saving anything. Like, I mean, he's not cheating. He's not Ted Cruz with his dirty tricks. He's not falling back on superdelegates. Like, he's winning fair and square.
But again, this is also the party that wants to disenfranchise half of America from voting.
They really don't want more people. You look at the charts of these Republican contests. They've gotten more votes than 2012 by a huge margin. I mean, enormously. I mean, in some states, they're doubling the turnout of 2012's Republican primaries. And I think it's dumb on Republicans' part to say, well, he got this candidate who's been the most popular candidate we've had in a generation, and then say, we got to stop him every way we can. I mean, they haven't had a candidate this popular, the group that's known as Reagan Democrats, and really working class Democrats, they've not had a candidate since Reagan be this popular with them. And the fact that they're saying, we got to do everything we can to stop this guy, I think that shows you where their priorities are, really.
Right.
And it always kind of makes me mad when I see Republicans talk about Trump's a racist. I'm like, you guys invented the Southern strategy, okay?
Yeah.
For 50 years, you've been using race and religion to basically flip the Southeast from Democrat to Republican. Like, this is your strategy. Like, 50 years of this strategy, and now Trump's a racist and the Republican Party's got a problem and all that. I'm like, I've been using this playbook for half a century, and it makes me really cringe whenever they talk about that. Because, I mean, I know Trump's got a lot of racist supporters. I like it when Democrats attack him for that, like when liberals and Democrats, that's fair game. Like when people go after that, I'm like, they should, because he's attracting a lot of these types. And it is his rhetoric that's doing it. But when Republicans, like, you don't dislike him because he's a racist. Let's get fucking real for a minute. You dislike him because you don't hate him because you think he's a racist. You hate him because you think he's a Democrat. You don't like him because you're afraid he's too liberal on, like, health care and campaign finance reform, getting money out of politics and all these different things. And you're all for free trade. You don't care how many jobs go overseas. Like, you're hammering this. This is what you don't like him for. So don't fucking pretend that it's because of some racist rhetoric which you've used for half a century.
Or it's the fact that you don't hate him because he's a racist. You hate him because he's openly showing how racist your party is.
Yeah. I think, that's a really good point. I said that, I'm like, this is why, for me, it's almost important that he is the nominee, because it's shining a light on, if they had Rubio, they could put a brown face and camouflage behind the same old bullshit. I mean, they could basically camouflage what they're saying. With Cruz, they could use his last name, I guess. I mean, they're going to use them in a way that, but when Trump's out there, he's like, no, build a wall or whatever. Like, that looks exactly how it is. Like, you can't camouflage that. Like, you can't disguise it away. I think that's what I hate about Ted Cruz, and we had to take this out of the last podcast because we ran too long, but this is a guy that, he's been able to brand himself as, like, I'm the new face of the Republican Party that looks a lot like the old face of the Republican Party. I mean, he looks like Joseph McCarthy reincarnate. And he's like, him and Rubio, they're passing themselves off as, like, we're going to get Hispanics back to the party, and they have a 30-minute debate at the debates about who hates immigrants the most and who's going to get rid of them, who's going to deport them. And I don't know if Rubio really believes any of that. I think he has to say that because he's in a losing battle. I think Texas probably does believe. He's a constitutional originalist, except when it comes to torture and the fact that he shouldn't even be able to run for president and all these different things. He's an evangelical Christian, except when it comes to kicking out immigrants and bombing up the Middle East. He's a Texan, except when it comes from the fact that he's really Canadian, you know, and he talks about New York values when really he's dad put Fidel Castro in power in Cuba before he fled to Canada. But there's all these different connections about him that don't really line up with who he really is. Texas was becoming almost a purple state. I mean, it was really becoming a more moderate red state. I think some people have said in 10 years it'll be a purple state because of the growing Hispanic population.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be Democrat. I mean, it used to have Ann Richards and LBJ and all these people until the Republican takeover. And I think it was becoming a little bit more purple. And Ted Cruz, he came, no, we're not going to have that. And as a Southerner, I have to hate that. He's kind of everything that's wrong with the Republican Party of the Southeast. He's not from Texas, but he moves there, and he's a fanatic.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of drawing all these fanatics from around the world to come to Texas or Alabama or whatever. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana. Nikki Haley, governor of South Carolina. Rubio in Florida. So it's kind of becoming a haven for the world's, like, right-wing crazies.
Yeah.
And in the South, you're having real Southerners who can't get anything done or really make any form of progress because these people have come there and been like, no, we want to be more conservative. And meanwhile, like, people that are native to Alabama or whatever, they don't have health care. They don't have anything. And they can't make any form of progress. It's that type of fake Southerner that really irritates me when you have part of the country like Alabama that's trying to grow and change and move beyond and evolve and maybe go from having the 48th worst economy in America to at least maybe the top 25. And then you have people like Ted Cruz just saying, no, we're not going to allow that. It bothers me.
Yeah.
But anyway, Michael, if you had to just real quick wage any predictions on who might win these, really, we've called it Super Tuesday, and this March 15th, the Ides of March, beware the rise of Trump. But I think you coined it Everything Tuesday, really. So, I mean, if you had predictions of, like, who's going to take...
I think it's going to be a big day for Trump. I think he's going to sweep by in Florida. I think it's going to be close, but I think he's going to beat Rubio in Florida. I think Kasich's going to hold on and win Ohio.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Missouri, North Carolina, and Illinois, you think, are Trump?
Yeah, I do. I think the only one that may be close is probably North Carolina. I think North Carolina could be close, but I think it's going to go Trump. I think Trump is pretty much going to wrap up the nomination. And it's nice to say that, too.
And then with Hillary, I mean, pretty much a clean sweep, I would think. Bernie, he may pull something out of his head in Missouri. I think it's going to be a clean sweep. The Democrats, it's not winner take all. Every state they've got is proportional, so even if it's not, it's over, Bernie. It's over. So, I mean, he would have to win states, not just the way
he's looking for Alaska.
Campaign manager talked about New York, which is over a month away, and then I heard him talk about California, and I thought that's the last state that votes. I'm like, you asshole, if you wait until California to drop out and you make Hillary, what, waste, what's it going to take, 10, 20 million that she desperately needs in November, or that could go to down ticket races?
Right.
I mean, you're just eating up money. You're just burning money that could go to real Democrats that need their seats or that need help. Yeah, I mean, I heard something about California. I thought, oh, my God. Is this guy for real? And they've got this ridiculous debate schedule that goes all the way to May. And I'm just like, if I have to keep watching this shit for 10 more months, I think at a certain point I'm not going to watch it, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's just, they had a Democrat debate Sunday night. They got a town hall Monday night. Tuesday, the results. So basically in a campaign night. Wednesday, they're having another Democrat debate. Thursday, Republican debate. It's overkill. We'll only see when it happens. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.wordpress.com.
Of course, you can find me at Alabama Liberal. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.